I'm gonna go live and I'm gonna check stuff. Okay. We're back. We're live, baby.
Okay.
Check, check.
We're good. All right. You ready to kick this off?
Yeah. We're totally ready.
Hey. I'm ready. Okay. We're good. We got all set up. Yeah, we're getting the live stream all set up. Okay. Welcome back to the Gregory and Paul show. I'm Gregory.
And I'm Paul.
Paul's live from where are you? Cafe in LA or something?
At a WeWork in LA.
You're at a WeWork? Yeah. I mean, if you guys are new here, we stream live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Yes, I'm on the West Coast. And Paul's typically on the East Coast. What time do we stream out there?
Usually at 2 p.m.
2 p.m.?
2 p.m. 2 p.m. Eastern.
And on this show, we break down the latest in SaaS, startups, AI. We talk about memes. We talk about whatever everyone is arguing with me on over X. Yes, I have been getting into the mix recently. Let me give you an overview of the topics that we decided on our very official meeting last night. So, Paul, we're going to talk about, Open AI preparing to go public.
Isn't that crazy? They're finally ready.
It's nuts. It's nuts. It's,
we'll get into
we'll get
it.
To it. Google I.O., tons of Google I.O. stuff. I have a couple topics that I want to talk about. The new Gemini Omni model. And I want to talk about the intelligent search box. Maybe we'll touch on changes that are coming to Gmail. I think the changes that Google is proposing, testing, demoing are really significant. I'm going to have a big impact. So we'll dive into that. A few memes I want to touch on. There was the Kevin O'Leary video of him criticizing people eating $28 lunch. So we'll have our boomer feedback segment. And then we'll touch on Jeff Bezos and his response to AOC and Mandami. I want to talk about what I think is a sad conclusion to the Elon Musk, Sam Altman lawsuit. And then we'll touch on the final topic, my experience with the Beehive MCP server. Paul.
Interesting.
What do you think about OpenAI filing to go public?
Yeah, I think they're ready to return some capital back to their investors so that the rest of us can get some capital.
Are you an investor in OpenAI?
No, I wish. I wish.
Yeah, neither am I.
The general sentiment in SF right now is that, the appetite for investing into SaaS is essentially non-existent, to be completely honest, just because so much capital is locked up in OpenAI right now, or OpenAI or one of these foundational lab companies.
100%. Yeah, I mean, between OpenAI, Anthropic, both were valued at what? OpenAI was valued at $830 billion. Yeah. Anthropic surpassed them at $930, right? Then you have XAI, which has another astronomical valuation that I think is obfuscated by the fact that they've all been rolled up into like one company. And they've got like the top 10 AI startups out there that have raised enormous sums of money, whether they're Cursor or something else. Yeah, I think you're correct that like it's kind of just sucked up all of the money available for venture capital. So from that perspective, OpenAI returning money to shareholders and investors is or should be good for the ecosystem.
Yeah. I wonder if they're whatever their IPO price is, do you think it will be over $1 trillion?
Oh my God, this is such a good, I don't know. I wrote about this on Twitter this morning. I've been talking to a lot of people about it. Like I can see both sides. Like I could see this being judged harshly by public markets. Like a lot of stocks that were private and were perhaps richly valued by private markets, they went public and they got crushed, right? Figma is the best example. Like it looks tough for them. I don't know if that stock's going to come back. If it come back, it's going to be years. But you also have the flip side, which is that other people have shared this with me. Like we're like really into this, dude. We talk about OpenAI like all the time. It's like basically the running topic of the show every week. Like we're just so in the mix. For like regular people, they're not paying that close attention or not as a close attention as we are.
Yeah,
the stock might skyrocket. Like a bunch of retail investors might be like, hey, this is my chance to get in on the AI trend and like bid that stock way up, right? Like they do have a promising future. Like it's going to be a big company going forward. They have a lot of great tools and technology that I personally use. I like to use OpenAI's tools actually. So I can like paint a picture either way. And I don't know what the answer is.
So that's actually a really interesting point. I wonder if this will be the first time general public outside of the AI bubble that we live in has any appetite to investing to AI.
I mean, that's what I and see, that, right? Is like all the, yeah.
And that crowd has to be not already captured by companies like Google or Microsoft. Right. Because both companies are also in the AI market. So consumers could already get exposure via those companies. OpenAI is this new challenger brand that's challenging Google Search, AI, and they're going IPO first. It could be really interesting. It could reveal a lot about the general public sentiment around AI, especially investing into AI.
Yes. Yes. It's almost like it provides the opportunity for the general public to almost have a vote on like what they think about AI.
Exactly.
And it's hard to say right now. There's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of positivity. I mean, on the investing side, you know, as someone who I've been very public that I have a small account that I just trade in because I like it and I do it because it's fun. I just lose a lot of money there, but it's fun. I enjoy it because I like to stay on top of trends and just pay attention to companies. And I feel like the SaaS trade is over. Like you look at like these SaaS stocks, whether it's Salesforce or ServiceNow, these things have been crushed. And like, I don't see them coming back anytime soon, which would argue that the people that were investing in that, right? So all the people on Twitter and FinTwit and the Robinhood trade and all those guys, they're all just going to pile into these AI stocks. Like, I think that's exactly what's going to, so like, I don't know if that's what happened, but that's one argument for like the stocks are just going to go to the moon. Like all of those people there, it's very clear, like you can't make money in any of those SaaS stocks at the moment. And they look like they're far away from recovering. I'll even say, like, I listened quite intently to the All In podcast because Mark Benioff was on there, like CEO of Salesforce. And I was very curious to hear what he said. Mm-hmm. And like, I believe like Salesforce can be a great company, but he did not fill me with confidence in that, like the stock was going to recover. Like I didn't think he presented like a really strong argument for why that company was going to be another, which should be a top 10 growth stock going forward.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. I expected him to do that. I thought he was going to like listen, be like, yeah, I'm all for it. Let's invest in Salesforce. Super exciting company. Like they're going to do all this great stuff. And he kind of like didn't really give me a lot of excitement or enthusiasm. He just was kind of like, yeah, trends come and go. People are negative about our business and we're going to do some cool stuff. But he didn't have a lot of specifics, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, he's in a position where saying less is more, right? So realistically, he could sit and watch how the market handles, how the market treats OpenAI. If the market rejects OpenAI or IPO, this could potentially be the pop that pops the AI bubble.
Right. It could go either way.
It could totally go either way.
Speaking of AI bubble, did you watch any of the Google I.O. stuff?
I watched quite some, mostly around search, how they are affecting or changing up the AI overview and have changed the search box the first time in the 15 years, I think.
So, take us through your perspective on IO in general. And because I had intelligent search box as one of the items. So let's talk about that now because like I've been playing around with it. Yeah. So what do you think?
So like if you've been paying attention, how Google have been slowly introducing AI overview into every single search, this doesn't come as a surprise. However, because they reach billions of people, the way that they have to roll out these products in general has to be very cautious and step by step. The marketing industry knows that this has been coming or on the docket for the last year and a half. Now that Google has solidified this kind of AI answer front and center instead of blue links, makes total sense to marketers. However, in true Google fashion, they're also kind of going back and forth, right? They just published the official Google guideline on GEO AEO. And essentially what they've said that they're not going to get rid of blue links. A good AEO is just the SEO. So they can't come out 100% and say things like, you know, we're not going to send you click traffic anymore because that'll destroy all of their confidence with their advertisers and publishers. But the general trend is that they're using AI's overview. They're using query fanouts. They're telling and tracking what people searches in a more AI way than ever before.
I mean, what did you think about this headline in TechCrunch says Google search is over as you know it? Like, what do you think about that? Do you think that's true? I think it's true. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, in some extent, being working towards that for the past year and a half. Google search is completely fundamentally different. AI search is completely different from keyword search. Keyword is more intent based. AI search is a lot more contextual based.
Did you read this part in the article? Starting this summer, people will be able to create, customize, and manage multiple new information agents within Google search. These agents can work in the background 24/7, track changes on the web, and alert you to new information. For instance, you could have an agent track market movements based on customer parameters and Google suggestions. So dude, if that happens, like that is fundamentally a huge change in how Google search works.
I'm gonna, in true Google fashion, I'm gonna believe it when I see it in action. It could potentially be added to, you know, the Google Graveyard launch product, Google Graveyard page.
I mean, they have alerts and yes. There's been alerts. People have done Google alerts forever that like, oh, the keywords for my competitor, right? Like, so is it going to be just like a better interface on top of that? Or is it going to be like a whole new paradigm? Yeah. It's hard to say.
I mean, Google killed multiple of my favorite products before. Google Reader was awesome. Google Finances, that was a stock market tracking app, was amazing. It lived inside of Google Search. Reader was partially integrated into Google Search.
There's still Google Finance. They changed it. It's all like AI powered. It's way more complicated. Yeah,
it's super complicated.
I find it really hard to use now.
Exactly. So like this Google Search has been changed narrative as existed for the last 20 years.
I agree. I'm often critical of Google about this. I think in general what they do, they end up making the user interface of their tools something that you need a PhD to understand how to use. Like they become so complex. And every time I ever bring this up with anyone who works at Google, they just take this like very condescending attitude. Like, dude, we did it this way because you got to go here and do this and click that. And I say to them every time, yes, but that's for people with PhDs. Like you guys all have PhD. Of course it makes sense to you. Like, I don't want to like spend an hour like learning how to use Google Finance. Exactly. I just want to go in there and like get some stock quotes and understand like why all my stock picks have dropped for the day, right? Like I don't want to like learn all this new stuff. But yeah, it'll be 100%. Interesting to see how this plays out, right? They still have the dominant position and everyone uses it. And so from that perspective, I think they'll be successful.
Exactly.
But yeah, they have a history of overcomplicating it. Did you look at any of this other like Gemini stuff, the video stuff they were doing?
I saw they released a new Gemini Omni model. I have not tried it, but I'm very interested.
They made a bunch of claims. It looks to me like there's a bunch of improvements on the video generation tool that my interpretation was like maybe trying to be competitive with like Runway or... They weren't very explicit about like what the goal of it was, but there's a lot of things in there that make certain renderings and certain types of like video generation better and higher quality. I don't think consumers care all that much, but Runway, which I've been using, which I love, creates like movie quality stuff. And I'm wondering if like that's what this is, like trying to just do something, jump something that's more movie quality, perhaps is the best way to describe it.
They are integrating this into YouTube.
There you go.
They're going to integrate this Omni model into YouTube, essentially help creators to like pseudo use AI to create content. So for example, with this podcast, we could use this model to add effects, make us wear hats, put different backgrounds, or like put us in different animations. I think that's really cool. I think
Do you think any of that stuff's cool? Like, do you want to do any of that?
I think what I just described is, because I lack imagination, but I think YouTube creators will figure out a much better use case than what I just described.
I'm super skeptical. I think it's a bunch of features that like kids will play around with for 6 months and they'll burn out on it and it won't be popular is what I actually think.
Interesting. I take the opposite side because they have sitting so much data, especially with the video data. Nobody has solved the AI video model yet. What they've also said is they're changing how YouTube search works and is now becoming more and more AI powered, right? You can ask YouTube to show you, let's say, how to play golf, and YouTube will synthesize, pull from real creator content, use Gemini to create instructional videos. I think that's cool.
I don't know if I like it. I think it's a potential to do exactly what happened to Google search, where like they just try to surface all their own content. They train it on all the people who've generated all this stuff on YouTube. And they just crush everybody who's ever been a creator. I think that's the plan. I don't know if like it'll work in video though. I think that like the consumer response might be a backlash that people might not like. It's hard to say, but they might not like AI content. I don't know. There's just a lot of unknowns. Like, I think it's cool that they're trying. I'm always for people doing new and interesting things. I like the idea of ask Google or to ask YouTube, right? That was called. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Like, I feel like people are really frustrated now that's like extractive nature of like how all this stuff feels. Like, all these people have been creating all this content across the internet, and now it feels like these large companies are just completely extracting all the value out of it and not really providing much in return for users, right? Like, whether like all the recipe people got kind of blocked out, like, now is it going to happen to creators? You know, I don't know the full answer here, but I do. There's definitely a group of people online who feel like this way, and they feel pretty strongly about it, right? You know, some of it is just how innovation happens, which I understand, but
yeah. In general, the stats says that younger people do enjoy watching AI videos.
They like AI videos. Yeah, if you
they like AI videos. Exactly. So it could just be a generational thing where Gen Zs, Gen Alphas are much more acceptable of AI videos. And it doesn't have to be complete AI videos. It could be like a creator merging of AI. I think that's just the future. YouTube, such a big platform.
We'll see. Part of what the videos I watch have lots of views. So like, part of what I like about YouTube is it created markets for all kinds of like, maybe boring or unusual categories that I don't think people thought were interesting. And they generally, what I like to watch, like people doing, I guess they're like real things. I don't think I would enjoy an AI version of it. I started watching all these like barista videos. Like, I like coffee. Somehow I stumbled into like this like rabbit hole of baristas and coffee shops. And I was like, oh, that was kind of interesting. And then I got inundated with all these like coffee shop videos. And I love watching them because it's interesting to hear about people like coffee business, starting their own coffee shop, reviewing like espresso machines. And my wife's like, oh my God, this is really boring. But like, I would not enjoy watching an AI version of that. Like, there's no market for it. Like, why would I want to watch a fake version of that? What's interesting is that it's telling me what people in the real world are doing at coffee shops. And I think that's kind of interesting. So
I see.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other videos. Like, I like these camping videos and exercise stuff. Like, so there's definitely some market for AI. I think it replaces or could replace like fictional content. Right.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
Because it's fake.
That's right.
Why do you even need it? Why do you even need actors? Right. If it's fictional. I was watching an AI generate video the other day, and I thought to myself, like, why do you need actors? Like, if you could just do AI, it's the same thing. It's just the storytelling that's compelling. It's like watching a cartoon. And so do I really need actors? But scripted fiction is not like a big part of the market. Like, when you look at video and television and what's monetizable, it's mostly sports. Right. That's what props up the entire broadcast industry. Live sporting, giant, like that's what people want to watch. Like all this fictional stuff, it's just like, it's a portion of the market. It's not like a big portion.
Okay, that's really interesting. I don't know. I mean, maybe you would think that Netflix would be all for this as well, because they spend so much money producing content.
Totally. I agree with you 100% that like young people will embrace this stuff in a way that maybe older people won't. I think you're dead on. I've talked a lot about that actually. Like, you talked about people generating their own music, like they maybe won't want like branded music or something, which I thought bizarre, but like I could totally see a future.
Yeah. It's so easy to generate content now. Let's not use the word personalized yet, because that's kind of still a little bit far off. If this thing moves at the speed and direction that I think it will go, it will just become personalized content for the masses.
What do you think about AI influencers? Like, they look real, but they're not real. Like, what are your thoughts on this stuff?
If it's for marketing purposes, I think it'll work until it stops working. People think it's cool, and then eventually they'll think it's not cool, and then it'll stop working, and then we'll figure something else out. Go back to real humans.
Yeah, I think people probably don't know it's fake. And then when they find out it's fake, they get very frustrated and angry is what I think.
They get frustrated. They get angry. They don't think it's entertainment anymore.
If they know it's fake from the beginning, they don't enjoy it, actually.
Correct.
That's what I think.
That's exactly it. Like, I think if they think it's fake and it's entertaining and it's not strict marketing, they'll be okay with it. Like if I'm watching like an entertaining AI rendered fictional movie, I'll be totally fine with it. If it's entertaining, good.
I think you're dead on. Okay. Anything else that you want to touch on that you thought was interesting from Google I.O.?
I think they are powerful enough to essentially capture the entire market. It's really about distribution of the product at the end. I wish.
You mean over Anthropic? And yeah. So maybe that's really the most interesting point to make is that, and I've said this for a long time, Google to me looks like they're going to win. Yeah, big but, in AI.
Think about this, right? Like, there's so many AI companies releasing AI products all the time. And we almost never talk about them outside of Anthropic and OpenAI. Google is the only company that's making us talk about all of these product launches. Everything else, I don't care. There's so many. Why should I care about you?
I just think that, like, they have a stranglehold on the market. Like, they have search, they have YouTube. They've got Docs. They've got all these tools and Gmail, right? They have the browser, right? They have Android. They have all of these things that they could just push AI products to.
It makes
and I think
me
they have the expertise.
Care.
Yeah. They have the expertise, right?
Exactly.
They've been investing for the longest period of time. They have DeepMind. Yeah. They have all of the technology. They have the chips. They have the data centers.
Totally.
They have Google Cloud. Like, they just have all of the assets.
So, We're in this, I know we're going over time, but we're in this cycle of AI where regardless if I pay attention to what's being launched, I know that it's completely relevant in 6 months. So the fact that they're making us talk about this on their platform is the only other company that could make me pay attention if they release some product is probably Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So on the entire market, that's the only four company besides Anthropic and OpenAI that would make me pay attention to AI product launches.
I think it demonstrates too that there was a point where OpenAI and ChatGPT appeared as if they were going to be a real threat to Google, and that seems to have passed.
Yeah.
All of the feedback I've gotten from the OpenAI ads product is lukewarm. People are trying it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. People are not excited about it, which I think is really important because I remember when the Facebook mobile ad product launched and people were bonkers excited. It was an amazing product and Facebook's advertising still is one of the best ad products out there. So the fact that the OpenAI one is not lighting the world on fire, it's missing features, it doesn't do the things that people wanted to do, it's expensive. I think that's not the greatest way to introduce that product. There was a lot of excitement and enthusiasm for it. I was really excited to
100%,
see 100%, to launch. And the fact it kind of fell flat is unfortunate. I hope that they do the things they need to do quickly because I still think it has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
But, 100%. It definitely has not reached the level of enthusiasm and excitement that I had.
Exactly.
I'd hope for.
Lulu said this really well. OpenAI feels overrated right now in the market and Google still feels underrated in the market. And
I would agree.
Attention will flow to underrated players. So that's where the attention is going towards.
I think that's dead on. They still could do it. And I I'm a big fan of ChatGPT at the highest level. I use that product all the time. It was the one I've used the longest. I have the most stuff integrated and built into it. So I really like the product and I'm rooting for them. I want them to be successful. Okay.
Yeah.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We got some funny kind of meme topics, I suppose. So Kevin O'Leary was recently in an interview about people spending $28 on lunch who don't earn a significant amount, who are perhaps earning less than 70K. And he's like, what are these people doing? And it was a great example, I think, of funny baby boomer advice where, he told people to bring
stop
their own
spending.
Water. The water one was funny. Yeah, stop spending $20. I actually don't think that's bad advice personally.
No.
$28 does sound a lot, but he was bring your own water. And it's the whole make coffee at home and then you can afford a $7 million home in Palo Alto.
That's right.
Tone deaf.
That's
right. Advice.
Yeah. Stop eating avocado toast.
Right. I think that
Make
is the obvious. That's the obvious counter to this. Yes, people probably shouldn't spend $28 on lunch, but people are spending $20 on lunch because they don't believe they can save up for a $7 million home. That's the core issue here.
That's
and if you save $15 a day, you don't end up with a couple million dollars. You end up with like a couple thousand dollars.
That's right. I don't know why we're talking about the guy. The guy's completely irrelevant to me.
I like Mr. Wonderful. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, to young people, I don't think he's relevant at all anymore.
There you go. Well, after he gave this boomer advice, I would agree. Okay, we'll move on. Do you want to talk about Jeff Bezos then?
Yeah, let's do it.
More boomer advice?
What did he say recently?
He had this long-ranging interview. It was very clearly targeted at, you know, people in the political world who perhaps want to have a wealth tax or are going after billionaires. It struck me as like calculated, like maybe a PR agency put this together for him. I thought he did quite well. I really liked what he had to say. I think he made a good argument for like the value that entrepreneurs bring and like the value that Amazon has brought. Like, I liked all of that. I thought that was all really good. I thought he made some great points. He took some heat too, as one would in that situation. And he made some controversial statements. Like, he talked about like not taxing people who make less than 100 grand or something like that, which was like an interesting idea that like I was against. So let me present both arguments and then we can debate it. So like the argument for it is that everyone should have skin in the game. Everybody should pay some kind of tax because that way they understand that like their money is being used by the government. Maybe it incentivizes them to not overspend, which is a big problem, and that it's important for everyone to like participate. Like, I actually think that's a really good argument and the one that I generally believe that like everyone should be a part of it, even though like maybe the amount of money that people who make under 100 grand pay in taxes isn't significant when it comes to the total amount collected.
Yeah, makes sense.
So the flip side, which is what Bezos actually presented, is that like it's so small and so like significant, like why even make them pay it, right? Which it was he made a good argument for it, and I think he made some good points. I almost like can't decide now, because I do think he's correct that giving that money back to that person would be significant, right? They could buy their $28 lunch or use it for whatever that they need. And I think this part's really important. And this is what I actually tweeted, was like, they still pay taxes. So they pay sales taxes, there's other fees and taxes that they pay.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're not correct. And I've always been an advocate for like consumption taxes because I think it reduces consumption. That gets a better way to collect taxes. The argument against it, it's punitive to people who like there's a lot of arguments like out there.
Of course, it's bad for the economy, right? But yeah.
Yeah, well, bad for a consumer-driven economy, right? There are places that have higher sales tax and lower income taxes because the economies are set up differently and stuff. Yeah, like I said, these things actually get really complicated. But at a high level, I thought it was like interesting. I liked what Jeff Bezos had to say. I thought he did a good job. I actually can't decide like where I fall on this now. Like, I can see both sides to this argument. What do you think?
I have a little bit of like a contrarian or like a bird's eye view of this. What's Bezos up to these days? What's after his vacation on the islands? What's he doing?
St. Bart's with the champagne.
St. Bart's with the champagne, like a 18-year-old. What's he up to these days?
Funny. He's in Blue Origin. He's CEO of Blue Origin, right? Like, that's what he does full time.
And then he's what, chairman of AWS or Amazon? Chairperson.
Yeah, I think he's just a chairman.
Amazon?
He's definitely not involved in day to day.
The day to day.
The last time Jeff and I spoke,
I want to hear less from Jeff. Him and another person named Mark Zuckerberg. I need to hear less about these two people. I think like they are saying too much. It's detrimental to the shareholder value that is locked inside of both companies, Meta and Amazon. I think if they step back away from the general public's eye view, it would create a lot more shareholder value for both companies. That's my stance.
Maybe. I think it's hard. I think they get followed. It's just too big of a news item for them to avoid.
Hey, Zuckerberg has an island in Hawaii. If he just kind of disappeared for a year or 18 months, I would not think about him.
Are you trying to say if you have a If you have a private island in the Pacific that no one's allowed to visit, that you could effectively avoid the press, is that the implication?
That's the implication. Maybe you should put that to use.
They've all got these giant super yachts too. They can go retreat.
They also
to,
got
right?
super
they
yachts. Really,
yeah, they don't have to talk to anybody.
They don't have to. Mr. Bezos and Mr. Zuckerberg, if you're watching this, I think you should tell your PR team to make you disappear for a year. It's better for shareholder value. And better for your product.
So, Paul, in keeping with the theme that you're not excited about of tech billionaires, we have to move on and talk about another pair of tech billionaires suing each other, Elon Musk and Sam Altman, and the what I called the nerd trial of the century has concluded, and the case was dismissed against
technicality.
OpenAI on a technicality that the statute of limitations had passed and that Elon Musk had no basis to sue. Elon, of course, said he will appeal.
Of course. What are your thoughts? You want to add your thoughts first?
What are my thoughts? So, the conclusion of this trial was specifically cited as a reason OpenAI has filed to go public, that this was the only thing holding back that. Yeah. So that's interesting. I don't know if I have a strong opinion, actually, but like, I think it's interesting to know that that was those holdings back. And now that, at least from the OpenAI perspective, trial is over, they have been vindicated, even if it's a technicality. Now they feel confident they can go public. So I guess that's good. I think it's good that they go public. I think that in general, that that's a positive thing. I do think it'll return money to the market. I think it'll be good for startups. I think it'll be good for like high tech ecosystem. So from that perspective, I think it's good. I do think that like Elon, at least in my mind, has a point that we shouldn't allow people to create nonprofits and then turn them into for-profit companies. That's not like the spirit of what nonprofits were supposed to do. I think that point makes sense. Like it's very logical and that they've been allowed to do this. I don't mean involve the nonprofits and stuff like that's not what they're intended to do. So I do think that that is valid.
Well, I mean, out of this, the way that I'm thinking about this is he has finally convinced the second most important person in all of AI to vote against OpenAI. But that's an achievement.
Oh, with the, what's his name? Who joined Anthropic?
Kapati. Yeah, Kapati is now officially part of Anthropic, of course. Elon has...
Explain who he is quickly for people that don't know.
Yeah, so arguably he is the top, one or two most important person in all of AI. He co-authored some of the most important papers in AI. He's a deep researcher. He used to, of course, work for OpenAI, and now he's jumped sides to their biggest competitor, Anthropic. So between him and Ilya Sutskever, both of them are now kind of used to be part of OpenAI team, but now has since left the team and also voted against Sam Altman. Ilya was part of the board who ousted Sam Altman, and Kapati has mostly been neutral so far, but he's now finally picked a side. So for all intents and purposes, the timing kind of aligned. I think the general public sentiment is now very negative OpenAI.
Yeah, I would
at least very negative Sam Altman.
Well, the sentiment against AI is very negative, right? It wasn't on our list, but like that commencement speech that Eric Schmidt gave at Arizona State University was not well received. I don't think he handled it well either, but like the graduating classes of universities around the United States are like not excited about what's happening with AI, which is a huge change over like a year ago where students were all excited about how AI was, you know, helping them ace their courses. And so now we're in a really different place. I think there's like,
100%.
I even think that like the tech world is perhaps underestimating just how negative the sentiment is right now.
Yeah, this is actually very dangerous. Tangentially is actually very related to this, right? Generally, the public, especially young people that's graduating, views AI very negatively. It's a job killer. They can't find jobs. AI is kind of saturating the lower end of all white collar jobs. And we haven't really found a delivery mechanism that can convince these people that AI is beneficial to them, to society, which is going to be a problem, right? I mean, arguably social media, there's still societal benefit, but we've convinced people that it's at least entertaining. And some benefits, like you're connected to your grandma or your long lost best friend. And young people accepted it. Young millennials accepted it. AI has convinced Gen Zs that this technology is worthwhile, which
I've heard some
problem.
And anecdotal things like that, like enrollment at certain schools, people I've just talked to in my like daily life in like engineering and comp sci is like way down. That like people are so negative on the future and on a career in high tech that like they don't even want to enroll in like engineering programs. That's like falling off a cliff. And enrollment at universities is falling off a cliff too. Like it's some of its demographic. So like that's why like I'm not even sure we fully comprehend or understand the negativity out there at the moment. Like people are not happy with like the outcome and the anxiety and the like the lack of certainty about what the future is going to be. I think that that is how I would frame it in a more fair way. Like we just, like you said, it's that chart, right? That shows like AGI goes this way or the whole thing collapses and goes this way. Just like the outcomes have such a huge variance and like no one really knows right now, like what direction it's going to go.
100% I mean, it's like a systemic failure, right? Like it's the education failing the younger people. They're teaching them how to be employees. You kind of like work through these stages. You find an internship, work your way up. You get hired, work 9 to 5. All of that is completely thrown out the door because of AI. So of course young people are angry because
I always argue, I'm sorry, you finish.
I mean, yeah, that's it, right? Like it's a systemic, educational, structural, societal failure to the younger generation.
So do you think these things are cyclical? That's always the answer I give. Like I remember in the 80s when like everyone worked in factories, we started exporting to factories. There was a lot of pain in the labor market.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
People felt similar, right? Like that their jobs were going away. Like the same kind of thing. Like I just always wonder these things, like cyclical, demographic. It's just the natural course of these things. That there's an industry that builds up, it gets really popular, everyone gets into it, and then you know, it starts to like decline.
So it definitely is cyclical, but the danger with AI is just the speed that these cycles are happening. So like, for example, there's transition periods, right? Farm to factory, factory to white collar.
Yep.
These things happen across decades, right? Like farm to factory probably happened over, I don't have the obvious numbers, probably happened over 50 years.
Yeah,
but this collapse, it was a long time, right? Like, and then factory to white collar happened across a span of 2 world wars, really. So, but this AI transition or the collapse of white collar jobs happened in the last 5 years. Within 5 years, it feels like all of the entry white collar job is completely collapsed.
Okay, so what do you think about?
I don't think this has happened before.
But like unemployment numbers still aren't that bad in the U.S. So some of this is narrative.
It could be just not in the job market, right? Like for example, unemployment does not count people who've exited the job market because of outlook. So like a lot of 18-year-olds living at home, not actively looking for jobs, they're not counted towards unemployment.
Like I don't know how real. I always question how real these things are. I think a lot of these things are like vibes. Because like I posted this thing the other day that said like the only thing that all these AI doomer gurus agree upon is that we're 18 months away from all the jobs going away. But they've been saying this for 10 years. And I posted a link.
Yeah, that's
they all agree it's 18 months. They just don't agree on anything else. Like I posted a link to a 2017 article that said all the truck driving jobs would go away.
Yeah,
that's almost 10 years ago. Truck driving jobs have not completely gone away. They're not even close to going away. I can't even think of like a self-driving truck that is in operation right now that's 100% automated. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, fair.
So
fair.
I tend to think that I think that's actually what's happening. I guess like if you pin me down, I think that's 100% what's happening. I don't think any of the jobs are going away. I think a whole bunch of new jobs are going to be created. I think there's a lot of like vibes because there's been a lot of layoffs in tech, which are tough and they're not great, but I don't think that it's the job apocalypse like people think.
So agree with you there, but like all marketing, there's reality and there's the narrative.
Perception.
But there's a perception. Exactly. The fact that young people are not getting into STEM, they are angry about the job market. Employers are, let's say, not hiring as many younger people. It all compounds into, let's say, in 5 years, we just don't have enough people to hire in senior to mid-level jobs.
That's exactly what I think. I think in 5 years, there's going to be a massive shortage of engineers.
And so, I see this in development industry already, right? It's just people are not hiring students out of the school, so they're not getting mentorship. Essentially, it means that in 2 to 3 years, we're going to have a massive gap in the typical 5 to 10 year range of developers. So,
dude, I can share you. Gen X story time. This happened to my generation. So, like in the 90s, yeah. There was a thing called the slacker. And the people thought Gen X were slackers. Like, I guess not all of us went to college, but like Gen X people in their 20s were considered aimless. And we just wanted to play in like grunge bands and skateboard and do Gen X stuff and play around the internet. And then lo and behold, a lot of people credit the internet boom to that. Like prior to that, like 93, 94, 95, everyone's doing raves and drum and bass DJing. Like my photo I put on Twitter the other day of me DJing in 2000. That was like, I remember actually this whole narrative switch where it's like, oh my God, the Gen X slackers are the ones who are pioneering the internet industry and brought on all this like change and innovation that actually powered the economy and created a ton of value, right? So I've seen these things happen where like everyone who was in Gen X, they graduated from school, like it wasn't a great job market. 94 was challenging. Like,
so question to you.
It wasn't easy. We just weren't we just didn't have social media to go on and cry in our cars about it.
So, okay, question to you. Did people feel angry? Did people feel angry and like hopeless?
Bro, Gen X, man, we were just like, whatever, we don't care. We're just and doing our thing. Right. We just didn't care. That was the difference.
You were the original retard max.
Yes. The attitude was different. Like, my generation is maybe one of the smallest alive.
Yeah.
I believe like the year I was born, there were less people born that year than any year of people living. I'm pretty confident because I've looked this up. So there just weren't that many of me, if that even makes any sense. So there was this idea that like we didn't matter all that much. Big generation, no one really cared what we did. And we kind of liked that. So we're being slackers. We're hanging out. I remember when coffee shops became popular and Gen X was all about just like chilling in the coffee shop, listening to like CDs on your Walkman.
Mixtapes. Yeah.
Just hanging out and like not. Yeah, it was a little bit like, a little Euro retard maxing. And then like we played around the internet. Everyone's like, this internet thing's cool. And we just kind of messed around with it. And then it like took off. And that culture actually got transferred or translated into the .com world. Like that was the beginning of a lot of this like casual, like nonconformist culture that permeated the tech world. I would attribute to that. Like, I look at like Mark Andreessen. He is so Gen X internet guy. Like, I relate to him on this really innate level. Like, I can just see that guy at the coffee shop. Like, dude, I'm working on this web browser thing. Like, I can just hear it in his voice. Like, he just has that attitude, right? So it's very different than I think kids today where like, there's so much information, there's so much knowledge, there's so many promises. Like, they're just, the expectations are just way, way, way too high. Like, we had the lowest expectations ever. And in some ways, maybe that's what made us happy.
Yeah, I see that. So essentially, internet was kind of like your frontier, right? This is the unexplored new thing that your generation or
no one thought you were going to be a billionaire. No
on
one.
The internet.
You did not,
on the internet.
Right. You did not go on the internet because you're going to become a billionaire. You went on the internet because you were bored.
Right. Right. So like
totally different mentality,
kinda,
right?
Exactly. So Gen X kind of explored that internet frontier and then millennials, let's say, perfected it a little bit. We're kind of like the first native internet generation. But for Gen Z, I feel like they don't yet have this frontier. I mean, AI is kind of this frontier. So maybe like when we start seeing AI native.
This is a good question. We'll maybe address them. I think the concept of a frontier is a really important in American history.
Yeah, well,
history. We should talk about
wealth creation
some other time.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. And there is no frontier. And so So, dude, I still think space is going to be the frontier. There's going to be space. I am super optimistic. I just think people are just having a moment right now. Anyway, let's do this. We only have a couple minutes left. I want to transition to like my experience with the Beehive MCP server, because maybe this will tie it all. Maybe this will tie everything.
Say more.
I'm big on Beehive. That's where I do my newsletter. I think it's an awesome product. Shout out to Tyler. I think you're fantastic. I love everybody over there at Beehive. I even know some of the investors, whatever. Great platform. I've been using it from totally. Anyway, I've been using it from the beginning. I think it's fantastic. If people ask me like, why Beehive not Substack? And I'm very clear, because Beehive looks cool. I wanted my newsletter to look rad, and I hired this fantastic agency, and I spent more money than I've ever spent on a single vendor, because I wanted the design to look amazing, and I'm really happy with it.
Nice.
And for me, I didn't intend this to become a Beehive promotion, but the fact that they allow you to create really cool looking newsletters that are delivered over email is awesome. And I actually don't know anywhere you can do that. You can maybe do it on HubSpot, but they allow you to do that. And I love that. I think they look great. And I think find them very interesting, entertaining. I love it. So they were released an MCP server. Yeah. Product is excellent. Very different than Substack. Substack's more about a community. It's kind of like a social network. It's kind of like Twitter. And the design is more constrained. They all kind of like look the same. And I spent a lot of frustrating nights in there trying to make it look cool. I just gave up. I'm like, this is just not meeting my Gen X design standards. Like, I need it to look great. So I got the Beehive MCP server Beehive beta. I got into the beta. I linked it all up like two nights ago into Claude, and I'm playing around with it. And at first I'm like, this is amazing. So I like type into the console and I'm like, do this analysis and tell me what's going on and blah, blah, blah. And it's giving me all these charts and it's doing all this cool stuff. And I'm like, I'm even like yelling at my wife upstairs, like, it's the future. All the analytics is done through the console. It's so great. So then I start to dive into it and I start to realize that like all of the analytics are wrong. Like,
no.
Well, the more question, because I've been running the news at the beginning. I know everything about it, right? I'm like, tell me what's the most popular topics? Like, what should I write my next newsletter on? It does this analysis and it's like, these are the most popular ones. And like, how did you arrive at that? It's like,
yeah,
click through it.
Your intuition doesn't make sense.
CTR. I'm like, why CTR? Like, why is that the right way to analyze it? And it goes, I was like, I've been building up the list from very small to very big. So of course, like the CTRs might not be the best way to look at it. And they also vary depending on the event, right? People might click through more. And so Claude's like, oh, great point. I love the way it's like a real person. It's so funny. It's like, great point. And then like, it redoes the, I'm like, you need to take into account the amount of people the email is sent to and the CTR. And let's see what that does. It comes back to me and a whole new analysis, a whole new chart that says, these are all the popular ones. This one's most popular. And I look at that addition, I go into it and I'm like, why are you saying this one's the most popular? And it comes back and I'm like, give me the raw data. Why? It's like, this one has the most clicks. And I'm like, wow, why are there so many clicks in it? And so I ask it, Claude, like, why are there so many clicks in this one edition? And it comes back to me and says, there's more links. Like, that's the wrong way to do the data analysis, right? I felt like I was in some meeting with an intern and they're like, they're all excited about this. And I'm like, why? Like, why?
They have no idea what's going on. That's
right. Why does this have 500 clicks and the other one only has 100? Like, no one's ever beat it. And for whatever reason, that edition just had way more links in it that people clicked on. So I was like, oh my God. Like, I was like, then I said, are you looking at all of the emails? And it's like, no, the API call limits the amount of data that we can pull, and we can only look at the top like 20 or something. And I'm like, oh my God. So it's not even like looking at the full data set. And then I ask it like, why don't you do a random sample of the data? And it's like, that's a good point. I'm like, oh my God, like it's not doing the data analysis correctly at all. And so I thought this brought together all of our discussion today about AI. I felt like in that moment of like my experience with MCP server, I went through the entire, you know, product adoption curve from like the plateau of enthusiasm to the trough of disillusionment to like all in one, where I was like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing ever. Oh my God, this thing is totally lame. I guess I'll live with like its limitations and figure out ways to do it. Eventually I ended up with like that I was better off downloading all the data locally and then doing the analysis that way, which kind of defeats the purpose, I think, of MCP server. So there you go. That was my experience with it. I think it's cool. I'm excited.
I think your experience is happening everywhere in B2B contexts. Employees are getting sold of these new tools, new MCP servers by service providers, platform. They're saying, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever for the first 35 seconds. And they realize that none of this makes sense. It's happening over and over again.
Because I asked it too, like, how do we get all the data? And then of course, like in order to get the full data set, like it was going to be, the cost is too high, right? To do it over MCP server, because you'd have to make all these calls, like how it's set up. So you have to like download the data locally and do it, which is like back to like Tableau, essentially, right? Like working on the local data set. So I think it was fun. I'm glad I experienced with it. I do think that the interface experience of like using Claude as the way to like ask questions and get it is clearly the future. I've seen a lot of people who've been talking about these things, and like eventually we're going to get there where that's how you interface with a lot of things. It's just that like the expectations on like how you connect to the data, how you set up, still need to be sorted out. And I'm very confident they'll get sorted out, right? I mean, there's even a workaround right now, right? So I just download everything, do it locally. I can still do it through Claude. I'm just not like using MCP server.
Exactly.
All right, dude, did you have fun today on the show?
I think it was awesome. Shall we end it here?
Well, I think we should.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Thanks, Herman. And we'll be back live next week, 11 a.m. Pacific. What time on East Coast?
2 p.m.
2 p.m. All right, Paul.
See everyone. Okay, done.
All right. Uploading the video. I got to...